League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast joining you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and joining me today, as always, is Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he has been at Miller Park watching actual Brewers baseball, sort of, where and fans have been able to watch this online as well. The Brewers posting a couple of their intra-squad games in, of course, empty Miller Park. They're still getting ramped up for the start of the 2020 season. We know the schedule now, the teams that they will be playing and when this year. It turns out we also know next year's schedule in things that nobody asked for but got anyway. And we got to see the Brewers in action. So I guess off the top, Tom, I mean, I know spring training is lightly attended. Some of those early workouts that you see in spring training, maybe nobody's around, but you never get to see what you've seen the last few days. Players playing in an empty stadium. What has this experience been like? I just set the scene for us. What's this been like?
Well, JR, we think we're getting ready for the regular season by watching intra-squad games at Miller Park with no fans, because that's what it's going to be like, not the action, but the no fans part when we get to the regular season. So this is like the Brewers are having a dress rehearsal for playing. We're having a dress rehearsal for watching, you know. And I think at some point they're going to start piping some music in and some crowd noise even before the regular season comes, just to see if that helps. But it's just so weird. It's like we're watching practice every day in which fans are not allowed to come.
Since we last talked, the Milwaukee Brewers schedule has been released. All the schedules have been released for 2020. And interestingly enough, the Brewers, who were going to be opening the season in March at Miller Park against the Cubs, now are playing the Cubs to open this abbreviated season, but it'll be at Wrigley Field. A lot of fans sort of latched on to the sort of eccentricity that the Brewers will be playing seven games at Wrigley Field, only three games against the Cubs at Miller Park, kind of an unbalanced approach to that part of the schedule. And I don't know, that struck me as odd, but at the same time, I don't know what home field advantage even means when there's no fans in the stands. As you've talked to players and coaches, does that concern them at all? Do you think that there is going to be a home field advantage this season when the stadiums are empty? I mean, I guess you don't have to travel, at least. What's sort of your thought on that?
Well, I think there would be a home field advantage if it was a regular normal season and you had your fans, and also you were able to conduct your activities before games like you normally would, instead of having all this social distancing, all these COVID protocols, all the people wearing masks when they're not in the games, just all the things that we've been seeing since we've been going out to Miller Park. So you might have a home field advantage if you were actually operating under normal circumstances at home with all of your own fan base. But I mean, have the Brewers ever looked intimidated to you playing at Wrigley Field? They won one of the biggest games in franchise history there in 2018, game number 163. I think they like playing down there, and I think they wish the Cubs fans were there so that they could, you know, make them mad by beating them.
We got kind of a weird thing on Thursday. We got the 2021 baseball schedule released, and just a few days after the 2020 schedule was released, and it's sort of odd, I thought, that baseball was ready to release that at a time when we don't even know if the 2020 season will be played. Certainly don't know what's going on for 2021 yet, and it seemed like the type of thing nobody was really asking for, and baseball just decided to deliver it anyway. Milwaukee would open the season at home against the Minnesota Twins, their AL rival, which is interesting. I know you and others sort of pointed out it's kind of frustrating. The Brewers were scheduled to play some AL East teams this year. We're scheduled to play at Fenway Park, for example. Now they won't be doing that. In 2021, they're skipping over that. They're not replicating that part of the schedule for 2021, shifting instead to playing AL Central teams, just as they're going to be doing here in 2020 under the abbreviated schedule. So that I thought was kind of odd and kind of disappointing, really, in a way. But I guess just what are your thoughts to seeing the 2021 schedule on your, you know, on your doorstep already here in, you know, here in July in a season that hasn't started yet?
Well, it's the earliest they've ever released the next season schedule. I think it usually gets released in August. Some years it used to get released in September. I don't know what their thinking is. Maybe, you know, there's been so much bad publicity about some of the teams having trouble with their COVID test and guys not being able to play, waiting for test results, and, you know, so many hiccups, and that they just decided to throw something else out there that would sort of take your attention away from some of the bad stuff that's going on now. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But it's very curious, and this is why. I don't think anybody's going to start making plans for next year when they don't know if COVID's still going to be going on. You wouldn't. I don't see how teams can sell tickets for next year when they can't even tell fans if they're going to be allowed to sit in the ballpark. I just don't know the value of doing it. I also think a lot of Brewers fans in particular were upset that they moved on from interleague play this year against the East without actually ever playing any of those games and kept the rotation together so that now you're playing AL Central next year. So in essence, you're playing the same division in interleague play because you're playing the AL Central this year too in regional baseball to try to limit the travel. So, you know, fans who wanted to go to Fenway or wanted to see the Yankees at Miller Park or so on and so forth are very disappointed that they just didn't reboot the interleague schedule from this year and do it next year. So that's one thought. The other is, what in the world was playing the Twins right out of the chute? You know, two teams have to play interleague baseball the first series because there's an odd number of teams in each league. So there has to be an interleague series somewhere to start the season. But I don't think Twins fans are excited that, you know, they're playing the Brewers right out of the chute. We have the roof and everything, but you still might need a snow sled to get from Minneapolis to Richmond, excuse me, to Milwaukee that time of year. You know what? It's just that's your quote-unquote regional rival. You have home and home with the Twins. Very odd to be playing them right out of the chute like that. But somebody has to.
I guess that's true. That is true. The Brewers found out they would be, at least for the short term here, without a couple players who tested positive for COVID-19 in some testing done before everybody showed up for intake testing. Angel Perdomo and Luis Urias, the shortstop who's been a little snake bitten here. He was injured in camp before everything was halted, and he seemed to have gotten back up to full speed. He's, you know, young shortstop guy who could easily be playing every day, and then he gets hit with this and has to be down for a couple weeks, asymptomatic, but has to, you know, sit out now at a time as the Brewers are coming together and trying to evaluate what they have. So just tough news for Luis Urias. I know you talked to some personnel around the team and, you know, put something together for jsonline.com. What are you hearing about him, and what's your reaction to that whole situation?
Yeah, they mostly feel bad for the kid. You know, they traded for him. It was one of their big acquisitions over the offseason in the trade with San Diego. Everybody really was anxious to see what he would do in the major leagues as a young player. He was, you know, supposedly going to battle Orlando Arcia for the shortstop job. Instead, as you noted, broken hamate bone and playing in winter ball in Mexico, missed most of the original camp, then gets COVID before he even does intake testing in Milwaukee at the start of summer camp. So we'll see when he comes back. He was asymptomatic, so they're hoping he won't be gone a long time. You know, the unknown thing about any player who gets COVID is just how long you're going to be without him. It's not like a sprained ankle or a hamstring pull or something that you sort of know what the time frame is. COVID, you go into isolation and you're not allowed to come back until you have two negative tests at least 24 hours apart. So it might be 5 days, it might be 8 days, it might be 12 days. I mean, nobody knows, you know. And so they hope Urias will be back during camp, but they're not sure exactly when. But he definitely gets the Poor Devil Award right now for the season. He might want to go back to January and see if he could remember breaking a mirror or walking under a ladder, because, man, he's had some bad luck.
And important to note, too, that pretty much every team is going to have a case or two, certainly at the very beginning and probably over the course of the season, that really just having a couple players isn't even that crazy a scenario, isn't even that bad, I guess, comparatively speaking, numbers-wise. The thing to think about with this, and I said this on the Milwaukee Bucks podcast as well, this is such a rare injury or illness, however you want to classify it, because normally when guys have some sort of nagging injury or tweak, they can play through it to a degree. With this, it's not going to be a question of that. It's going to be what the diagnostic tells you. Do you have this virus or do you not? Whether or not you have symptoms, you're down for a period of time, no matter what, there's no getting around it. And it's going to strike randomly. It's going to strike, you know, players that you just, you know, might be the stars of your team on the fringes of your roster. There's no way to predict how this is going to impact teams. It's really going to come down to which team is luckiest over the course of the season. Players that don't have to, you know, take 2 weeks off to try to get healthy. And that's best case scenario, that they're asymptomatic and they can get healthy in 2 weeks. I mean, there's obviously the risk here that somebody's going to catch this virus and not be able to come back, or certainly not be able to come back quickly.
Well, in that regard, JR, Christian Yelich had a very telling comment when we talked to him about it the other day. So they did intake testing of everybody when they came in. Now the protocol is every player gets tested every other day. So Christian said every other day you could lose a teammate, you know, because that's when the testing is, you know. If you only tested every 5 days, you know, then you might only lose somebody every 5 days. But they're going to do it every other day. So he said, you never know. He says you're going to be on pins and needles every other day when they do testing, wondering if anybody has COVID. And that's a very frank and worrisome way to look at it. Now, the good news is they are doing a ton of testing. I mean, they've got to try to stay on top of this. It's the only chance they have of trying to get through even a 60-game season. So I do think it's exactly what they should be doing. But his point is very well taken, you know, that anytime they do a test, a positive could come up.
In around baseball, the other aspect of this is that the testing hasn't exactly been, you know, been seamless. You've had a couple camps that have had to shut down because testers didn't show up or the results didn't come back fast enough. I mean, it's kind of no secret. If you can't get results back within a 24 to 48 hour window, they do you no good. You know, you can't just keep coming together waiting for test results after, you know, 4 or 5 days. And so you've had camps like in San Francisco and in Oakland that have had to shut down momentarily. To me, this isn't a huge red flag, because I think that there are some kinks that have to be worked out of the system here. And I think by the time we get to, you know, to the nitty gritty here, there will be a rhythm where these sorts of things won't happen.
Right.
But I have to imagine it gives some people some pause. You know, this was all thrown together pretty quickly. And now you get in a situation where you've seen how it's not flawless yet. It's not seamless. And this is not something that can be trifled with. It's a life or death situation in many, many cases, and certainly dictates whether or not they can have a safe season, or at least the guise of a safe season. So when you see these camps shut down, what does it say to you?
Well, as unfortunate as that has been, and as maybe unfair as it might be to certain teams because they don't get to practice as much as other teams, let's not forget how fast they threw everything together after they were unable to reach a negotiated settlement. A lot of their problems go back to fighting for 3 months over money and not being able to have a negotiated settlement. And then at the last second, Manfred has to impose a season. And now in less than a week, you're running guys in there doing intake testing. So they just threw this thing together so fast out of their own doing. Was no one else's doing but themselves. You know, if they could have had a negotiated settlement a month earlier, maybe they could have taken 2 weeks to have people report to camp instead of 6 days or whatever it was, and maybe all this initial testing stuff would have been ironed out. Some of it was over the July 4th holiday, too, and that's when they opened up. You know, we've been joking among the media corps, thanks a lot. You know, we sit around for 3 months with nothing to do, and then you open up on a holiday, Saturday, July 4th. You know, of course, that's when they should have been opening the season, not camp. I would be worried if we heard it persisted for much more going forward. You know, I think there probably was a real fast startup on a holiday testing period. They do have a lab, their own lab in Utah, processing tests, but I think now they found help from outside. You know, these are a lot of people being tested every other day, as we just noted. So let's just hope all this stuff gets smoothed out and it's not a problem going forward.
The Brewers did make some adjustments to their roster on Thursday. They added 12 players to the 60-man roster. The Brewers initially were just going with 45 guys. The 12 guys that they added on Thursday aren't likely to really make an impact necessarily with the big league team, but you're talking about a lot of prospects, guys that the Brewers are going to want under evaluation for the course of the year. And, you know, some of these guys, I guess, have an outside chance to being on the big league team at some point this season as depth. But for the most part, you're talking about guys like Ethan Small, Bryce Turang, guys that are highly regarded that still need some seasoning. A couple players that I'm interested in seeing how they fare here. Corey Ray, the outfielder, outfield prospect who really has had an up and down career with the Brewers. His season a couple years ago was so great, followed by sort of injuries and struggles last year. And, you know, it really maybe kind of looked like time was up on Corey Ray's time with the Brewers. And having this COVID interruption, I think has maybe opened a door for a guy like him to still be part of the franchise and maybe still contribute in some way. I'm sort of curious to see how he takes advantage of this opportunity. The outfield is very crowded for the Milwaukee Brewers right now, but you could see how maybe down the line he could sneak in there and become a depth outfield piece at the big league level. I'm also kind of curious to see more from Antoine Kelly. He's a recent draft pick, young kid, left-handed pitcher, throws gas. He's somebody who I definitely would want to see more from and hear reports from if any are available, because I think he's got a pretty bright future. Anybody else on this list of guys added on Thursday that jumps out at you?
Phil Bickford.
Yes, Phil Bickford. He is still with the Milwaukee Brewers organization.
I don't know if you remember, he pitched great in spring training when he was brought. They kept bringing him over from the other side. He wasn't actually in the Brewers camp. They kept bringing him over from the minor league side, and he pitched great. So apparently that stuck in their minds. So rather than talk about every individual player, let's talk about why they're doing this, JR. People say, why are they bringing these prospects? Well, lest we forget, there's no minor league baseball this year, and that's where all these guys would have been playing and had a year of development. And rather than lose an entire year of development with some of their top prospects, which would really be damaging both the player and organization, they decided to bring some of their better prospects in to give them 2 months of coaching, instruction, and they'll, you know, simulate games and just baseball activity under their eye, rather than just throwing them out there and saying, go play for an independent team or your American Legion team or, you know, your community team or wherever you are going to be able to try to find a little baseball back home. They want it under their eye. So these, you know, they're going to have 30 guys in what I call Camp Appleton, and there'll probably be 15 at the most that they'll draw from if a player gets hurt or is playing poorly and needs some time off. So don't forget, they're opening with 30-man rosters. Then it drops down to 28 after 2 weeks, and then to 26 after a month. So they'll actually be funneling more players back to Appleton as they go if guys don't get hurt. And so they're just trying not to lose a development year on these guys. And they've left two openings. And we asked David Stern today if Garrett Mitchell, their newly signed first-round draft pick, might get one of those spots. And they basically said he's under consideration. It also leaves two spots for them to make outside moves. You know how at the end of camp some year they pick up a player from outside the organization? As a matter of fact, David Stearns has been very wise in picking up players at the end of camp and having them play useful roles on his team. So they're also opening up. They're leaving two spots open for outside moves as well. So, but the main thing is to have some development there. You know, that Camp Appleton is going to be very interesting because they only going to get to play games against each other unless the Cubs or White Sox alternate training teams pop in for, you know, an exhibition game or something. But so they're going to have to be really focused and really professional, because that's going to be boring there sometimes. You know, they're going to have to be creative to keep these guys' curiosity and intellectually stimulated, because in a lot of ways it's going to seem like just a never-ending camp, spring camp, you know. And so they've got to find ways to challenge them. But they would just like to get some of these kids some development time and some coaching and some instruction. So I think it's very smart to do that.
And we've talked about just how fascinating this whole thing is going to be, where they're going to be in Appleton and sort of, you know, sort of cloistered by themselves, but not have the opportunity to play games, or kind of just be going to be sitting there waiting for their number to be called. It'd be kind of nice. They should add a guy like Tim Dillard or somebody just for comic relief, somebody to keep them loose, you know, and Tim Dillard can pitch a little bit. So why not give the guy a chance to sort of keep everybody's mind sort of, you know, sort of focused and in a playful way with everything that's going on.
And they have to live in a bubble too. You know, they have to follow COVID protocols too, but without the thing to look forward to every day, a Major League Baseball game.
Right, definitely. Now, you mentioned Garrett Mitchell. He does sign, since we last chatted, signed his contract with the Brewers. I don't think that was necessarily a surprise. What did surprise me a little bit was he signed right at slot value, and I thought he might get a little more than that, given that the club had signed its other four draft picks for under slot value, and it sounded like that was, or at least in my, you know, untrained mind, thinking that money would probably go toward what it would take to sign Garrett Mitchell, but that's not what happened. So maybe you can kind of give a sense of where that money allotment goes, if it specifically goes toward player, you know, signing additional players who are guys who weren't drafted, or like what sort of happens next to that money for the Brewers?
Yeah, I think so by my calculations, they in signing their five draft picks, they were about a total of like $900,000 under their where they were capped for their entire signing bonus pool. Their entire draft pool. Well, they've already spent $120,000. They signed six of those undrafted free agents. Those guys are $20,000 a pop. I don't know how many more they'll do, but they've signed six of them. So there's $120,000 of it there. So I'm sure they'll find something to do with all the money. You know, maybe it'll stop a few more people from getting laid off, you know, in the baseball ops. So we'll see. So actually, they've had in essence, a 12-round draft, because they've signed six undrafted free agents who would have been drafted in the original 40-round draft. So one of them, Noah Campbell, a second baseman for the University of South Carolina, pretty highly regarded. And I think they had another top 300 guy on Baseball America's list too. So, you know, It's nice not to just add five guys to your system. It's nice to add some more, even in a year when there's no minor league baseball. But they feel very good about the five guys. You know, they went for bats, upside, guys who are athletic. Garrett Mitchell has, you know, star potential. You know, that he can do a lot of things coming out of a really high-powered program at UCLA. So they're getting quite the Southern Cal posse going now, JR. They've got Keston Hearer, Bryce Terang. You had Garrett Mitchell, Yelich, and Braun live out there. I mean, they got quite the Southern Cal chapter of their ball club right now. At one point, like over half of their lineup might be guys out of Southern California.
Right. I think Garrett Mitchell, I don't remember specifically how the tweet went, but he had something to the effect that the last several UCLA first-round draft choices have all won World Series championships. I don't remember exactly how it played out.
Yeah, the last X number of first rounders out of UCLA already have championships. So he's hoping he falls right in line with those guys.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. You know, maybe we should have talked about this when we were talking about the COVID stuff a little bit, but you did a story at jsonline.com. Of course, you and Todd Rosiak covering the Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking to Brock Holt, and he had some really compelling comments about his circumstances and why he felt like he had to come back and play baseball, that the option of opting out really didn't apply to him because he's on a short-term deal, and he's in his 30s, and he doesn't know for sure. If he doesn't play this year, there's a chance he's not going to be offered the money he wants for a contract next year or any contract next year. So there are a lot of guys, I have to think, that are in his shoes, guys, especially on the Milwaukee Brewers, who have a ton of short-term, one-year deals, guys who feel like they have to go out there and prove themselves and play, even if, you know, circumstances, either in their personal life or just in their own hearts, are not ideal for them to be out there. I mean, you've got lots of veterans who can afford to sort of opt out if they want to, but I was really interested to hear what Brock Holt had to say.
Yes, and it was very compelling to hear Brock Holt say that, and also he deserves a lot of credit for that type of honesty and just kind of bearing his soul a little bit there. He has a wife who's 7 months pregnant and then a little boy also. So, you know, he left behind literally a growing family, and it was hard to do. And what made it so compelling is he's not some stiff that's never done anything in the major leagues. You know, Brock Holt's been a very good player, a lot of it with Boston, and he's a very versatile player, and the Brewers were really thrilled to get him because he can play infield, outfield, all over the place. He doesn't have humongous salaries, so it's not like, you know, he's bankrupting teams. He's 32. The modern day analytics are not kind to 30-somethings, but still, in one of his better years last year, although it was cut down by injury a little bit. The Brewers do hold a club option for him next year, and so the player never knows if that's going to be exercised or not. So his point was, I don't have control over my contract for next year. The Brewers might, but I don't. So it just showed you a lot of guys just, you know, David Price opted out and walked away from $11 million. And everybody says, how in the heck can a guy walk away from $11 million? Well, if you've made $300 million in your career, whatever he's made, you know, you can do it, you know. Brock Holt hasn't made that kind of – Brock Holt's biggest salary he's ever had is $3.5 million last year. This year he has $2.5 million, but he's going to get less than $1 million prorated. You know, so, and I know people go, well, whoa, less than $1 million, you know, have to really scrape by. Well, these are major league players. They earn on a different stratosphere than the normal person does. So don't compare him to yourself. Just compare him to what he does for a living. And also know that at age 32, he's getting closer to the end of his career than the start of his career.
I always push back a little bit when, you know, especially with this sort of millionaires versus billionaires debate that was the labor battle. It's not always that simple. There are a lot of millionaires who play baseball, of course, superstars who have major contracts. But, you know, a lot of guys, they haven't really raked in the money. For one thing, they spent years of their lives going up through the minor leagues where they're getting paid less than what the average person is making on the street. And, right, you know, they're trying to keep their dream alive. They're making pennies. They finally get to the, right, big leagues. Many of them just for a cup of coffee or for an opportunity to play on sort of a lower end contract as Major League Baseball goes. And yeah, that money isn't money you just sneeze at. But again, they're not going to be doing what they do for their career into their 60s and retire like the average guy on the street. You know, $1 million to a guy who's a utility infielder is going to need to last him for a lot of years following his playing career, unless he gets into, you know, another field of work. So it's not apples to oranges to say that these guys are getting pampered and paid way above and beyond what the average person makes. You know, an expert surgeon who's a millionaire, that's somebody who's a millionaire every year until they're ready to retire in their 50s or 60s. A guy who's a millionaire as a player only has this small window to do anything with the amount of money that they're able to make. So it's not as simple. I mean, these guys are not as far removed from the average Joe as we seemingly like to think they are.
Well, as an example of that, it was this humongously big deal when teams volunteered, quote unquote, volunteered to pay their minor leaguers their weekly stipends of $400.
Right. It was ridiculous.
$400. And that's before taxes.
And you got guys like David Price volunteering to pay for those things when the team should have been doing it. So it was a big mess.
Right. But I mean, basically, some teams were shamed into giving their minor leaguers paupers' wages while the game was shut down.
Right, exactly. Brandon Woodruff worked 5 innings on Thursday, the equivalent of 5 innings, through about 70 pitches. And kind of curious what your what you saw from him. Obviously, it kind of, you know, it doesn't take a mathematician to figure out that he is lined up to pitch on opening day. That's certainly the direction you would have expected the Brewers to go in any circumstance. And he was an all-star, you know, an all-star last year. So he's their guy pretty much coming out of the chute. And, you know, after you talk about him, any other observations? I know you haven't seen this team play very much. You've seen these couple intra-squad games, some workouts. But anybody else jumping out at you here that, you know, that we may not, that we may be surprised to hear about here in the early going?
Well, they, you know, it was a controlled scrimmage, a situational scrimmage. So we'll say he went 5 innings, but some funny things went on in some of those innings. But still, JR, we're not even a week into camp and he's throwing five innings, that's a very good sign. And it shows you how hard he worked while the shutdown was going on. He had gotten himself up to 90 pitches in his own individual workouts and came to Milwaukee early and pitched at that hitter's academy against some top prospects, I think, like maybe Gavin Lux or Jared Kelenic, you know. So he was working hard and trying to get himself so that this 3-week camp would not be a, you know, a rush job for him. And so, you know, I think they'd be most pitchers, they'd probably be happy if they got five innings out of him at the start of the regular season. But he threw five innings today, you know, on July 9th, you know. So very, very happy, I'm sure they were about that. And, we've talked about it before that it's kind of a mixed blessing to get the opening day assignment for the Brewers because it's been like the Bermuda Triangle of baseball. People go in there and then you never see them again. Maybe this year's just so stinking bizarre and nutty and crazy that just none of that jinxy stuff even matters. Everybody's been jinxed this year by just being here for COVID, you know. So maybe that just – that just nixes out jinxes. So a very good sign for them. Jake Faria threw a lot today. You know, J.P. Fireisen threw today, and we hardly recognized him. He lost like 25 pounds during the shutdown by putting himself on a strict diet and workout program. And he is a lean, mean fight machine now. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what that does for his career. He's trying to break through and to make his major league debut. He's a Wisconsin native.
Yes, Scotty.
Yeah, lives in River Falls, went to UW-Stevens Point. So, you know, anytime you can get a cheeser in a Brewers uniform, people get excited, as they should. And so we'll see how he does. But, you know, they're planning on keeping a lot of pitchers. They're not going to need guys to throw, complete games. It's funny. I was on MLB Network Radio today with Steve Phillips and CJ Nikowski, and they were talking about how Craig Counsell likes to chop up games and if I thought that this schedule would actually work for him. And I said, well, guys, you know the Brewers have not had a complete game for 2.5 seasons, don't you? And there was this pregnant pause. They thought I was kidding.
It's one of those things that Brewers fans can kind of recite off the top of their head now. Yeah, it was Jimmy Nelson in July of 2017. That's the last one we've got. That's sort of common knowledge here.
Yeah,
now.
And so I told him, I said, the guy's not even in the organization anymore. So I said, I'm not looking for any CGs this year. We don't have those in a regular season, much less a 60-game season. So, but they really thought I was kidding. You know, it's real funny, Tom. So 2.5 years, yeah, right. I said, no, that's true.
Yes, 70 pitches that Woodruff threw through Thursday. That's a normal workload for a starting pitcher before the relievers take over in the Milwaukee Brewers.
I know. It is going to be interesting this year because, as we've talked many times and as Brewers fans are well aware, they've had two great Septembers with Craig Counsell managing an expanded roster. But this year we're operating in reverse by having the biggest rosters at the start and the smallest rosters at the end. You know, it's 30 to start, 28 after 2 weeks, then 26 after a month, forevermore. You know, so the Brewers better go like 20-7 in August.
This is how the 2020 jinx works for the starting pitchers for the Milwaukee Brewers. Brandon Woodruff is going to go like 7-2, 2.3 something ERA, a tremendous season, but he won't get the Cy Young because it's only going to be relief pitchers who wind up in consideration for that award because they'll be the ones with the bigger footprint in a 60-game season.
Well, I'm going to go out on the safest limb I've ever gone out on and say the Cy Young winner in both leagues are going to have the fewest wins that any Cy Young winner's ever had.
Yes, Tom Hodricourt, expert analyst for the Thank Milwaukee you. Journal Sentinel.
I just went out on a redwood forest limb.
yes, very good. Just from an overall perspective, you've been around the team now a little bit. You've talked to the personnel associated with it, and I know Craig Counsell said things like he's not even focused on the season yet. He's focused on keeping people healthy, getting them ready for opening day, but just being always cognizant of health first and safety first at this point. And I guess now that you've been around it a little bit, are you more or less optimistic that, you know, I think everybody sort of knows baseball's probably going to start here, but coming to completion is still very murky, very uncertain. Are you more or less optimistic that we're going to see a full season, a full 60 games of baseball at this point?
This is my response to that question, and it will be my response, I think, till we get to the end of the season. You know the old saying, in baseball, we're going to take it one game at a time? Never, never, JR, has that been more appropriate than this year. I think it's just total folly to look past tomorrow, because how do we know, not just within baseball, but in general society? You know, it's not looking good right now in a whole bunch of states. You know, I think even today in Wisconsin, we have one of our highest totals of positive tests. So we're spiking too. So I'm not looking past tomorrow, because just in general society, it's not looking good. And we still don't know the answer to what is the tolerance level of MLB for positive cases on a team and in the sport. You know, is it five players, six players? Is it three teams, five teams? How many people would have to get sick before they'd stop? You know, and if they stop, man, it's going to be hard to start back up. So, let's just take it one day at a time. And I'm not even hedging my bets on that. I'm just saying that's the wisest policy to take right now in life in general, you know, and much less in baseball. And, you know, we're starting to, you heard all the news today about the college football. You know, every day we're getting dialed back in some way on society in general and sports, you know. So let's just wait and see. You know, I think we got lots of more scaling back coming in basketball and football. So let's see how baseball does.
Yes, the Big Ten announcing that it would play primarily, well, right now, a conference-only season at this point. Other leagues, of course, have started taking measures to suggest that there'll be like no fans in the stands for NFL games this year. It is a very surreal setup, and I know it'll be very different in baseball as well, but I think everybody's just looking for some sports on their TVs at this point, and they will happily settle for that, even if it means everything else is thrown out of whack, just anything that's like real sports.
I mean, here, let me read the list of stuff that has not been canceled this summer. Okay, there it is.
Yes, that is the full list. You got to get creative in the summer of 2020 if you want to keep yourself entertained.
And that's what we got to have baseball, you know.
Yes.
We got to have baseball. I agree. It might be for TV only, but man, are those ratings going to be high, JR. Those ratings are going to be astronomical.
Yeah, I've been watching the TBT, the basketball tournament, with some alumni. The game I saw most recently, the Marquette University team has an alumni team in there. And man, it's just so great to watch live basketball close to the sports I care about, you know, get those competitive juices flowing, I guess. It was nice to have that back, you know, back in our lives for a second or two. And it is just going to be so, you know, so weird to live in an age where, you know, the sports are on now, but they could be taken away from you pretty much in a moment's notice.
15 days, you know, that doesn't sound like a lot, but in the world of COVID, it is, you know. But 15 days to opening day in what's going to be the most incredible setting ever, a totally empty Wrigley Field with the closest fans up on the rooftops up there.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see it. It comes under weird circumstances, and there's obviously a cloud over it, but it's going to be interesting to see all that. Before I let you go, Tom, anything else that you want to throw in, any other observations that you've had from Brewers Camp?
No, but I will say, even in the limited way we've been able to cover it, just to get out to Miller Park and just see him out there, you know, even practice games. You know, Ben Gamel made a diving catch in center field today. I mean, you're seeing like real baseball stuff. Lorenzo Cain got a couple of base hits, came back to first base and gave the give me the love hand signals. I mean, just seeing stuff that we used to take for granted because they played every day, you know. And so it's a huge tease right now, and that's why we got to get through the next 15 days intact.
He is Tom Haudricourt, Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks for joining us, Tom. As is the case every podcast, hope we've got more stuff to talk about in a week, and we get closer to baseball. As we just said, that's not a guarantee, but we will see what we can chat about. Thanks for joining us.
We'll take them one podcast at a time, too, right?
Yes, one podcast at a time. Find the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating or review. You can find Tom and myself on Twitter pretty easily as well. Let us know what you think, and we will chat with you again very soon. Thanks for joining us. Take care.
Thanks, JR.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.